Okay. Hey, everyone. It's Colette Kenny here. I just wanted to welcome you to therelationshiplounge.com. The Relationship Lounge, as many of you know, is a gathering place for people just like you who dig love and want to be really good at it. So tonight we are here on Connect with the Experts, which is our live coaching call series where we host the best of the best dating and relationship experts from around the world. And as always, we have a very special guest here with us this evening. But before we hear from this inspiring and very passionate man, let me ask you this. Are you ready for romance, sex, and passion that blows your socks off, inspires and empowers you, and fulfills you in every way? Would you love to learn what has been crippling your chances of experiencing true intimacy and passion, and what you can do to guarantee success? At the Relationship Lounge, we believe it's time that you got what you want, which is why I am so thrilled to introduce our special guest for this evening. He is the Passion Consultant, originally from England and residing today in Los Angeles, California, and his name is Barry Selby. Barry is a licensed spiritual counselor with a master's degree in spiritual psychology. He empowers his clients to create conscious, passionate, and fulfilling relationships. His purpose is guiding others to live authentically, and his focus is with singles and couples to have amazing, sacred, authentic relationships, fulfilling their highest potential. With Barry's more than 25 years of experience in spiritual psychology, human potential, personal development, and insight into the masculine-feminine polarities, he is especially gifted in assisting and guiding you to your heart's desire, which means we are absolutely in great hands tonight. So, Barry, welcome to the Relationship Lounge.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Great. I'm so happy to have you here. I think we're going to have a great call tonight. We've got some great great stuff you're going to be sharing with the audience tonight.
Wonderful.
So, to our audience who is listening in, Barry has promised to share with you how you can uncover and release hidden beliefs, challenges and rules from your history that have sabotaged your success with romance and relationships. You will learn how to feel fulfilled in the present so you are ready to give and share from your overflow. Neediness is going to be a thing of your past. And finally, Barry will inspire you to create your crystal clear vision for the kind of partner you'd like to attract and the kind of relationship that you'd love to have. And as always on all of these calls, Barry will be taking your questions throughout this call, so please be sure to submit your questions as we move along. Okay, Barry, so we have lots to cover here tonight. How about we just dive right in?
Sounds good to me.
Okay. Okay, so the first question that I wanted to ask is, a lot of our listeners here are wondering how to put an end to their unhealthy relationship patterns that seem to sabotage their success in love. This is a very important topic, so how about you share your thoughts on this?
Well, certainly. In one of my writings, I talked about the whole Groundhog Day effect.
Okay.
And it's very clear for many of us, I've done it myself, where we would take patterns without realizing it and repeat them again and again in relationships, creating a serial experience. And what I've discovered really is the only way to change that, it isn't about changing the other person. And one of the type experiences is, that means I have to change.
Right.
So for people who wish to have a different experience in a relationship, it starts within. It has to start with ourselves. There is no way of fixing it by changing your partner. And some people have tried that many times over. In fact, many people in the news have too. So taking steps to change the patterns are the key. And a large part of that can be being aware of what triggers you in the past. What it is that is the continual reminder of something's not working, and get to the bottom of that. And usually what it comes down to is some sort of mirror that your partner held up for you that you weren't willing to look at.
Right.
And the way I look at it from a spiritual point of view is that spirit takes care of us and provides us with the lessons as we go through relationships. Relationships are probably the best workshop for self-development there is.
I agree with you. That is one of my favorite sayings.
Oh.
Yeah.
For me too, because it's very clear that relationships, because it's the most intimate and direct contact with another human being.
Absolutely.
So anything that doesn't really, it's a nice way of putting it, whatever is there will be sandpapered into being fully. I mean, that terminology comes from Lisa Nichols, who talks about how relationships are gifts wrapped in sandpaper sometimes.
Right.
And so it's that ability to realize that the sandpaper there is a blessing versus a curse, that we can grow into a next place in relationship and have more fulfillment in our relationships.
Well, the thing, too, is that, like, whatever, you know, one thing I've heard, I think this comes from, I think it was a Harville Hendrix quote, I'm not sure, but basically it has to do with, you know, whatever you kind of point your finger at another, so your partner, you're pointing at them, and whatever you say with emotion, mm-hmm. that's kind of where, like, the real mirror is, right? Turn it again,
right.
Turn it back to yourself and have a look at yourself. But not a lot of us want to do that. None of us really want to admit that it's us. So what do you have to say about that?
Well, there's so much I can say about it. But one piece I just want to put in there as well, because that mirror is not necessarily a one-to-one relationship, because sometimes a pattern we have in a partner is a reflection of something in ourselves that is the opposite of that, like a dovetailing pattern. So one person may feel that their pattern is they don't get too close, and the other person will feel abandoned by them. So they both have their own patterns that interlock, but they're not the same pattern.
Mm.
So it's being aware of that's key.
Right.
So the truth is that when I talk about this, it really comes down to what are we not willing to own up to and grow into that stops us from having what we really want in a relationship and keeps us locked into those patterns of recycling relationships.
Okay. And so what advice do you have there? Like, how do you work with clients to invite them to look at those patterns that they may not have been looking or willing to look at before?
Well, there are usually some main I'm trying to phrase it in a simple way. There are certainly a couple of quick key questions I'll ask a client, and it usually involves early history, including parents.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the patterns we exhibit in relationship, we've inherited or we've learned from those around us. And usually our parents and our peers are the ones we pick them up from, and that's where we think we should do things, but it doesn't ultimately serve us.
Right.
So that work can be working with forgiveness to release those judgments. It can also be just to unearth what those are in the first place. And by doing so, what ultimately happens, and the piece that I always love about this is, at the end of this journey of resolution with somebody in the past, there is always a, I won't say a need necessarily, but I encourage gratitude.
Mm.
Because there's a blessing in that apparent curse, that once you realize the blessing, you realize how much love was really there, and you can be thankful for that. And not that you need to go back and do anything about it or change anything, but you move forward from a place of gratitude, which is another key ingredient for creating what you want.
Totally. I love that you bring that up, because that was a big topic from the last call that we did with Liesl Rigsby. And again, with gratitude, one of our callers on the last call was, you know, sharing how she's tried the gratitude thing to sort of get over the past and invite someone new in and sort of start over, but that it, you know, gratitude didn't work for her. So do you have any thoughts on that about if people have used sort of this gratitude piece where they've invited gratitude, they've looked back on the past, they've tried to be thankful for everything that's happened because it's gotten them to where they are today, but yet they still can't let go. Do you have any thoughts into that?
Well, the biggest piece of that is that the truth is that to have what you really want in all areas of life, not just relationship, it's vital, and it's also it's not possible without it is to have gratitude, but not to say you should make it a panacea or make it like a whitewash over what happened. The work I do with clients, especially when it's healing the past, because of the background I have with psychology and other things I've learned for myself that there are patterns we create and ways of doing things that will become our blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't be grateful without resolving those first. And sometimes it's a matter of going deeper into what it is that's been holding us back, so then we can become more free. And when you are free, that's when the gratitude appears. Gratitude is not a forced thing. I will not do that. I won't have a client be grateful for something that's not working. But I will notice that the client becomes grateful in almost like a natural flow when they step into their freedom and their self-love and fulfillment of who they are now.
Okay. So basically, once we become aware of the patterns that have been holding us back, where it's almost as though we're taking responsibility for whatever patterns we've had that have held us back, that's when we can step into gratitude more easily. Is that what you're saying?
Well, there's a couple of pieces in between there, but yes, when we become responsible for our own participation in the pattern, not necessarily for creating it, but if we become responsible for our own participation, then we can move. And by having the steps to take to heal that once and for all, and that is complete for ourselves, then there can be the gratitude there. Gratitude is one of the things that I talk about in a way almost being the icing on the cake versus the cake itself.
Okay.
You know, the work to be done first is the resolution. And gratitude may show up when you're in another relationship, realizing how different it is now. And then you look back in the old one and go, oh, now I see. So it's not like you must have gratitude before you can have a relationship.
Right.
They're not sequential. They can happen in different orders.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. That's actually one of the questions that we had for you later on. So I'm just going to try and find it here. But it's the one where mission or relationship, does one come before the other?
Yes. That's one of the things that was a powerful lesson for me about 4 years ago. I think it's about 4 years ago now, maybe even 4.5 years ago. This is something that goes into the gender dynamic, the masculine-feminine paradigm. And I hadn't done a lot of work of this prior to about 5 years ago. I'd done pieces of it, but I really got clear about 5 years ago what was true. And what I learned and then really owned for myself, because I saw how it really showed up through my life.
Yeah.
For the masculine energy, for the male primarily, purpose and mission are the primary motivators in life. And I'm sorry to say this to the ladies, but relationship comes second to that. That a man who's looking to put relationship before he does anything else is not healthy in his masculine energy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a woman, a feminine woman in her true essence, the fulfillment of relationship is as important as or more important than a vision or purpose, because the feminine is more of a multitasking and can multi-track in what she does. The ability to do purpose can be totally complementary to being in relationship. But masculine, because masculine men generally, I don't want to use generic terms, but men who are in the masculine are more, I was going to say unitaskers, that sounds so nasty. But there's more of a single focus, I'll put it that way.
Right.
We men are more single focus, so if we don't have a purpose in place first and have it running and becoming true to our hearts, we won't be very effective in relationship. And I speak for myself, I did have more than one dysfunctional relationship because I put my partner before my purpose, which was wonderful for about 3 weeks or a month or two. They loved that experience. And then they went, where's the guy who had clarity and direction and a strength of will about him? I've given it up for her. And I see men do that. And so for men to have their purpose clear, it's almost more important for the planet's benefit and then for their relationship to benefit second.
Right. You know, this is so interesting because I had a client just before this call today where that was exactly what the discussion was. You know, he's a man who's, you know, not effeminate but just has more feminine energy. And right now he hasn't found his purpose. You know, he was let go from his job and he's trying to find his place in life and what that is. And him and his wife are having some struggles. So,
yeah. And it's not about the money. Ultimately, it's not. And there's one thing I'll be clear about. It's meaning. And for a man, man has to have meaning. I mean, there's a book that from way back about man's search for meaning.
Yep.
But it's a truth in the masculine sense of the word, is that the masculine male, it's almost like a relationship won't fulfill him if he doesn't have a meaning to exact in the world in his doingness and what he's about in the world.
Right.
You know, the relationship for me, I'm clear about, is something that a man almost has. I'm phrased in a way, it's almost a sense of like the man has his work in the world and the relationship is his prize in a way.
Right. Yes, exactly. Right. So, and what does it do for the feminine to be in a relationship with a masculine who doesn't have purpose? What is it like for her?
Well, there's going to be a couple of things that happen. Something happened for me, my past experiences, because I wasn't in my masculine very strongly. I mean, I'm looking back and seeing how different I was back then. My partners were women who were strong in their masculine. So they had direction and I didn't. And it's almost a compensation in a way that the partners do that. I talk about this I have a presentation that I've done for a while now, but it talks about how in a relationship between man and woman, actually it works in gay relationships too, there is a percentage of masculine and a percentage of feminine that ultimately both equal 100%. So the man and the woman in a relationship, or if it's a gay couple, the men, people of the same sex, between them they combine to have the same amount of, the total amount of masculine equal 100 and the total amount of feminine equal 100. So if the masculine naturally is in, say, 75% masculine and 25% feminine, his reciprocal partner he attracts will be the opposite of that. So the woman he attracts to will be 75% feminine and 25% masculine. If he's in a more feminine mode, it doesn't mean gay, but he's in a more feminine mode. Maybe he's a caretaker or something like that, which is a more feminine energy. Or a nurse, which is generally a more feminine energy, not too typecast.
Yeah.
That energetic will draw to a woman who's probably stronger than masculine. Maybe she's more of a business person. And that can work if they both are naturally in that space. But if they're putting on a persona or a mask that fits that role, at some point in time, they're going to feel that shift inside of wanting to change back to their normal role. And that can create disruption in the relationship.
Yeah, okay. Okay, and that kind of makes sense too. Just again, going back to the client that I'm just thinking about, where you know, his wife was has been in a very masculine role, you know, in her mm-hmm. work and everything like that, and now she's starting to shift. It's like it's almost like she doesn't want to be in that masculine role anymore, and
right.
wanting to become more feminine. So that's probably where they're having some difficulty, because he's holding more of the feminine energy in the relationship, and her desire to move to that side. It's like, okay, now where is the masculine in the relationship?
Yes. Oh, well, and I've been there. It's a dangerous place to play, in the sense that it can really threaten the quality and the health of the relationship.
Okay. Well, so that's good. So, so how does somebody know then, you know, what energy they mostly have, and you know, how do you sort of work together to make sure that there is that polarity between you?
There's a few pieces to this puzzle, so I'll give you some highlights, because there's a lot more to it than just we can cover in a few minutes.
For sure.
In a simple breakdown to masculine and feminine, the masculine, as I mentioned before, was more of a single-focused, this is going back to paradigm from what Alison Armstrong talks about, as well as David Day, is one of my both teachers of mine.
Yeah.
The masculine is more of the hunter, who's directional, who's almost like the lone wolf who's out in a direction to find something. That's the energy of the masculine, who's on a quest or a journey to get somewhere. The feminine is more the, I would say the gatherer, it's not really the right word, but the feminine in her full essence is more about community, about connecting, and about being able to do a lot of things at once. It's the natural tendency. Women generally are better multitaskers than men are. That's innate in our physiology.
Yeah.
Because the feminine can spin 7 plates at once, whereas a masculine will have a hard time spinning more than about 2 or 3, because he's going to look at each one individually.
Right.
So the differences in energy are very important too. So masculines generally are more linear, whereas feminine is more free-flowing. In a simplistic explanation, this is something I learned when I was learning tango by a friend of mine, which I really love this, because tango is one of the best teachers of where somebody is in the masculine and feminine relationship, because how they dance shows them exactly how they are.
Mm.
And the piece of that was also that, in a way, the masculine in its strength is like a flagpole, and the feminine in her strength is like the flag. The masculine gives her structure while she flows freely, and that's the dance in tango that really exemplifies what the masculine and feminine do together, that neither one can do on their own.
Okay. So one of you is more structured and one of you is more free-flowing, and that's how
yes.
you tell where you're at in your relationship. And if both of you are free-flowing, you're probably going to experience some troubles. And if both of you are structured, you may also experience some troubles. Is that fair to say?
Yes, indeed. For example, another analogy that I've heard many times as well is that the feminine is like the river and the masculine is like the banks of the river.
Right.
So it is about structure and flow and working together to create the result, which is health and vitality in the relationship.
Okay. Well, that's good. That clears that question up for me on a big level. So hopefully our callers and our listeners got that same understanding. So how about we keep moving on, because we've got lots
Certainly.
More that we're going to cover.
Okay,
so you say that we can feel fulfilled in the present moment, so that neediness becomes a thing of the past. Now,
right.
what advice or suggestions do you have to offer with respect to this?
Well, the first thing I'll say is don't look to your partner to keep you fulfilled.
Okay.
That's the danger that we fall into, and I know I've done before. It's what really exemplifies codependence in a relationship. And that was fine for many people, but nowadays it doesn't seem to fit the paradigm we're moving into, and it's more about...
Oh, hello? Oh, no.
No, it's okay. Sorry, my phone
okay.
just slipped. It dropped. Like, what happened? what was I?
That's all good.
Yes. The flow... Let me get back to what I was saying. Sorry,
where we're looking to our partner to fulfill us.
Yes, and hold that thought for a second. I just wanted to say, I just realized how much in the masculine it was, because as soon as the phone went out, my focus was on the phone, I lost track of where I was. That's a masculine trait, by the way.
That's totally being in your masculine, completely focused.
Yes. That's
awesome.
The thing also, I'll just say, just as a sidebar on that, when women and men are in conversation, a woman is very good at catching all the nuances. And sometimes a man will say, what did you just say? Because he had a thought went off something she said and lost track of where she was now. That's one of those things in relationship that is definitely something to be worked on, because sometimes that can create rifts without realizing it, because we don't realize our natural abilities. So
right.
it's good to know the differences of skill set so that we do have health in our relationships.
Totally. So it's not exactly that a man isn't listening to the woman. It's that he got hung up on one thing that she said, and even though she kept talking, he got focused on that one thing and went down a path on his own. Is that
exactly.
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a trap, and to make that wrong is the trap.
Right. To make it wrong. Exactly. Just what's better is to be more understanding, to understand
right.
that this is something that can occur.
Right. So I remember
okay.
we were talking about codependence and interdependence.
Yeah.
Okay. That was good. I rewound that one.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing about fulfillment is in my research, and also I write about this in the program we'll talk about later on,
yeah.
it's clear for me that when someone is more attractive, a lot of times they're attractive because they present themselves in a way that is fulfilled, they're in their peace, they're happy, they're joyful. It's a very sexy and attractive quality. And most of the time people who look like that are already in a relationship.
Uh-huh.
Most people who are single who don't know that that's what they can do for themselves will tend to have more of a needier or a hungry edge if they're looking for a relationship, at least. I mean, there are people who are single who just are busy doing their lives, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But those who are single who are looking for a partner can sometimes, and I don't want to say globally, but can sometimes come from a place of need.
Yeah.
And that is, frankly, an unattractive quality.
Absolutely. I would say that is exactly who I was before I finally figured out all of my stuff around relationships.
Yeah. I mean, I've been experimenting with that myself recently,
yeah.
and I've met more attractive women because I'm currently single. My work, and this is the thing, my journey has been to lead me to this work, and until
yeah.
this work was running, I wouldn't be willing to be in a relationship, even though I tried to. I had created a zone that wasn't available to anybody, and now I am in a place of being available. I'm just enjoying the exploration of what's available and who's out there. And what I've noticed is the more I'm in my own place of being fulfilled, as you were saying, then the easier it is to meet somebody and have enjoyment of conversation without any need, desire, or hook involved.
Exactly. Yeah, because ultimately none of us want to be put up on a pedestal, do we, where we're the savior of somebody else.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Well, you know what? We've got actually quite a few questions coming in, so how about we switch gears here for a couple of seconds
mm-hmm.
and just start taking some.
Absolutely.
Okay, so one question is from Atlanta, and it's a woman from Atlanta asking, if you're not fully sexually compatible with someone, as in they turn you on less than other people you've dated, but you trust, admire, respect, and could quite possibly love them more than most people you've dated, does the sexual compatibility eventually work its way out, especially if the parties are willing to work on it? I've always been under the impression that sexual compatibility either is or isn't.
Well, I'm questioning about sexual compatibility versus sexual chemistry, because those are different things.
Okay. Yeah, well, let's talk about both.
Okay. Well, sexual compatibility is something that can be worked out to a degree. I mean, if there's certain... Because there's a whole polarity when there's extremes on the conversation. But in the core essence of sexual relationship, sexual chemistry is something that is generally innate, and it can develop, but a lot of times it's instantaneous. So that's one of the things that is more random and not as plannable.
Okay.
But sexual compatibility is something that can be worked out, because what can happen for couples is that one partner has had some history through their own upbringing or something else where their partner will trigger that for them and create some challenges for them. Now, that's the extreme
mm-hmm.
case where it can create trauma.
Right.
But a really key value is if you come from the loving and your intention is to love each other deeply, that can be transcended and can be resolved. So sexual compatibility can, and yes, it can be worked through and work itself out with intention and with communication.
Right.
And love is the core ingredient, but there's more to it than that. It's about the things that we do together that support each other. You know, there's a whole smorgasbord of choices of things that can disrupt a relationship romantically. So it's
okay.
about being conscious to your partner's needs and have a communication so you can share with each other what you really want.
Right. Okay, so it's like, it almost feels to me like allowing each other sort of the safety to be vulnerable, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, to be real in the relationship and accepting of whatever that realness is without making it wrong or bad.
Right, and that can include intimacy, because intimacy, again, talking about broad strokes, for women, intimacy applies in some areas of life. But for the man, traditionally, we were taught that intimacy was only involved in sex.
Right.
So there's a disparity of what the masculine and feminine have learned as a way of being intimate. And so to find common ground in communication that's intimate, in touch that's intimate without being sexual, in any way
yeah.
we dance together and play together, that creates an intimacy, because that's the safety and that vulnerability that can develop that then creates a much safer space for really joyful sex, to be blunt.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so are you saying then that men have learned that intimacy means sex, and they can find different ways for intimacy to develop outside of it just being sex? Is that what I heard?
That's been the model. I mean, I'd say it's not everybody's experience, but a large part of especially in the Western world, men were very much entrained to be like, you know, you're very much in, you have your walls up and you do your work, and then you only have intimacy when you're in a sexual relationship with your partner.
Right. Okay. But now you guys are coming to realize that intimacy is in just even light touching, kind of, you know, in the kitchen, passing by and, you know, brushing up against your partner, that kind of thing. That's intimacy, and communication is intimacy. Is that right?
Well, I was going to say on the communication piece, there's another piece I didn't talk about yet, which is what shifted in the technology is happening now.
Okay.
So, yes, in answer to your question, the answer is yes. Intimacy can be between siblings in terms of it's not about sex, and that's the thing that is really clear to understand is that sex and intimacy are not one and the same. They overlap, but they're different. So there can be intimacy between men who are straight. There can be intimacy between men and women who is not sexually connected. And that's the piece to realize that intimacy is a way of being that is a closer way of connecting that does not require genitalia in the sense of use, you know. And the piece about communication you mentioned, we've shifted a lot in the last, God, it's been so few years, really, but the idea of texting and Twitter and everything else. I mean, I saw a posting today, Twitter turned 5 today. So in 5 years, we've gone to this 140-character communication model.
Yeah.
So talk about essential communication. There's been this shift in the way we talk to each other, and the danger is that using texting as a way of communicating and as a mindset in how we communicate limits the possibility of how we can become intimate with each other.
Hmm. That's really interesting, too, because I've worked with a client who met their partner online, you know, and texted and mostly just, I mean, they chatted on Skype as well, but just the majority of their relationship was on email and text. And then they moved in together. They got into the same city and they moved in together, and things didn't go well.
Yes, there was enough depth there. I mean, I'm very clear when working with clients and also with friends. I'm very clear to let people know it's like you've got to spend time in communication with each other.
Yeah.
Value the words each other says.
Right.
That is where the depth can come.
Okay. Yeah, that's really good. You know, and you know, what kind of came to my mind when they moved into with one another, it was almost like, if anything, so, you know, because all couples will struggle, right? All couples will have disagreements and arguments and that kind of thing. And when you're doing it over email or text, you can take a moment away. You can clear your head. You can, you know, you can let the your heart rate come down where you're thinking more rationally, right? And then when you're in person with that person and getting into an argument or a disagreement, it can really send you off, can't it?
Well, I would tend to disagree with that, actually.
Okay.
Just give you
yeah, sure, by all means.
I do not recommend anybody resolving arguments or upsets via text, email, or typing.
Right.
I'm very passionate about the power of the voice and the power of the ears.
Right.
And the ability to listen to each other through a verbal communication, even in person, is even better than over the phone.
Yeah.
Because, and this is going back to the paradigm of communication. You know, we, as it's been said, less than, I think it's even down to 7% of our communication is verbal. By what we say, the words we say.
Yep.
More than that is based on the timbre and the tone of what we say, but more importantly, our physical beingness because of our body language, our facial expressions, and all things we do besides what we say, because the words themselves don't have the weight without everything else with it.
Exactly.
So if you are with it, when you're with your partner and you have an upset to resolve, yes, it's good to take time out to calm down first, but it's also vital to communicate face-to-face, we can see and feel each other to then get to the core of what's going on. Because the only reason that people get upset, really, is because something's not lined up with the love they have. And what I would say is that when people say, well, you know, we get angry, and this is what I grew up with in my family, into my experience, at least that's the way I filtered it, that anger was the opposite of love. Because I thought the loving was always peaceful, loving, and tender, and if you got angry, that meant you didn't love each other anymore. Well, that's nothing further from the truth, because it's true that we can't get upset with something we don't care about.
Uh-huh.
So being angry at somebody means we must be invested in some way by loving them.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was actually an insight that one of my clients had last week. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The reason they upset me so much is because I love them.
Right.
Yeah, it's very
and
good.
I notice that I have people who trigger me in some of my service opportunities, and I know clearly that isn't about something I don't care about. It's like, what is
right.
my investment? What is my investment? What I believe is being the truth that is being violated by what I believe them to be doing. And it's
yeah.
all about the belief. It's all about the internal process.
Absolutely, yeah. And so when you do sort of react with emotion based on something that somebody says, you really have to go and check in, like, what belief do I have that makes this so difficult to deal with?
Right.
Yeah.
And, of course, the biggest trap is to go, oh, well, I'm right, they're wrong.
Exactly.
And I'm a big proponent of them saying, okay, well, if that's what the position I'm in at, do I rather be loving or would I rather be right? Well,
right.
If I want to be loving, then how else can I see this?
Yes. And really, how can I, like, what part of this am I, like, what responsibility do I have in this? Not that it's your responsibility that the reason that this upsets you so much, but really the responsibility is what belief from my past, you know, makes me think a certain way about this that's really driving the way I'm feeling about this situation, right?
Right.
That is your responsibility in the sort of that disagreement. Would you agree?
Well, we're all drivers in the relationship. There's no passengers.
Yeah.
So we have a responsibility to contribute and be participating fully, and that does involve taking responsibility for everything.
Yeah, yeah. And especially the way we feel about certain things. So.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
and
yes.
That's another paradigm, again, about how the women generally were known to be more feeling type and men weren't, and that's actually not true. Just the men haven't been trained how to articulate and share that in a way that is constructive versus losing their masculinity to do it.
Okay. So what insights do you have there?
Well, moments of admission of guilt, as it were. I've always found a soft spot when I watch movies or read certain books that move me emotionally. Now,
yeah.
as a straight male, that was never okay amongst my peers, it seemed, when I was a kid especially.
Yeah.
But the truth is that I know, especially having been around some amazing women in my life, both romantically and as clients and as friends, I've seen how being emotional in a healthy way is actually more attractive to women in a man. That not to be vehemently expressive in that sort of way, but to feel deeply, to be
yeah.
really compassionate. So the ability for the masculine to have a strong spine, to be really clear about action and goal, but have an open heart to be able to share emotionally and feeling tone is more functional. I mean, this also touches back into intimacy as well, because to share emotion for a man is some men, is the most vulnerable and intimate place they could ever be in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
More intimate than being, you know, naked having sex is the emotional nakedness.
Yeah.
And yet, for many women, that's the most attractive quality a man can have for them to be seen that way by the women. That they
right.
they actually will love them more because they see the man as he really is, and that's the gift that he can give her.
Very good. Yeah. So, emotionally naked in a relationship on the man's part is a good thing then.
Within the rhythm and the realm of being honest with their emotions, is not to say, well, I'm going to keep expressing to make her happy. There's
right.
obviously a reality to that. And it's also not about, well, you need to be voicing anger, because we talked about that. It's about being able to share the feeling level. What if we're upset, talk about that. Don't bottle it up. Don't hide it away, because the woman can feel
yeah.
it. Women,
absolutely.
Again, women are very plugged in and tuned in. The intuition
yeah.
and sensitivity that a woman has outstrips a man's by many, many magnitudes. And the truth is that a man's like feeling he's hiding his emotions. A woman can read him like a book. And I'm sorry,
right.
guys, but that's what women can do. It's natural for them to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So the best you can do is be honest.
Right. See, and that's interesting, too, because that leads into that, you know, Dr. Sue Johnson, she's a Canadian. She's written the book Hold Me Tight, and she does emotionally focused therapy. Have you ever heard of her?
I have heard about the book. I don't remember her name in the back of my mind, but yes. Please
yeah.
continue.
So basically, though, in this book, what she says, like, this reminds me of sort of that pursuer-withdrawer pattern that men and women will find themselves in, where the female
mm-hmm.
is traditionally the pursuer and the male is traditionally the withdrawer. And it's kind of that's what you're talking about, isn't it, where she can intuitively sense that he's not sharing, he's not being truthful
right.
With his emotions. Yeah. And
well,
so you're just
that's
saying,
funny, because that's the reverse of the dating cycle.
Right.
Because the male's a pursuer and the feminine's a withdrawer, or I should say the more of the elusive.
Right,
in the culture,
exactly.
It's interesting how that switches roles when it's in the emotions.
It is. That's a good point. So in both cases, really, well, in everything, truth is the answer, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. Bottom line, just be truthful. It's that simple.
Yeah, as I say often, when all else fails, try honesty.
Yes, exactly. What's true for me right now? Like, that's really it. It doesn't need to be what's true for me yesterday or tomorrow, but what's true for me right now? What's true for me in this moment?
Right, which is another tip I'll offer as well, particularly for the men. Women in general, their truth shifts moment to moment. Men's truth tends to stay consistent for a day or a week at a time.
Mm,
in the simplicity
like
of that, women, because again, back to the sense of the river and the river banks,
yeah.
Masculine holds a position that is his strength, and he will stay in his belief system that's strong for that. The
right.
Feminine shifts through natural order, and a man who's expecting his woman to stay in the same truth every moment like he does is expecting a miracle that won't happen.
That's awesome that you share that, because I think there's probably a lot of women out there who totally identify with that, you know, that our minds change.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's natural.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And for man, it's infuriating. It's not what
it
we
is.
Want. At
right.
the same time, it's what we pray for. It's this really interesting dance that we have with the woman, is that you have so many things that we'll never understand. I mean, if a man expects to understand a woman, forget it. He doesn't have a chance.
Right.
Because you are so different from us. And that's
yeah.
what John Gray talks about in Mars and Venus.
Yeah.
And it's the truth in a good way, because that's what makes us so fascinating to each other.
Right. Yeah, because it's just like, you know, if we were all the same, how boring would that be? Yeah. Okay, awesome. That's really good. I'm glad that came up. That's an interesting piece of information. So, okay, let's keep taking some questions here, because there's some good ones. So I've been single for over a year, and now that I'm happy alone, I'm scared to let someone in. Is that bad? Will that feeling go away?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Mm-hmm.
I've had that one before, too, with clients.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge is that we tend to think that our state is based upon the condition we're in or the environment we're in.
Yeah.
And our journey through relationship and singlehood, it's in a continual adjustment flow that we're going through, growing into a new level of being ourselves, because who we are is never violated by being alone or being in a relationship. So when we are at peace with ourselves, that's a huge reason to celebrate, frankly. If we can find ourselves autonomous and loving in who we are, celebrating life as we are without needing a partner for that, that's
mm-hmm.
healthy.
Absolutely.
And then the key thing is adding a partner as the bonus to that, where we basically love from our overflow versus from our need.
Mm.
So what she can bring to a relationship is huge, because she's, I'm assuming it's a female, you said?
Yes, it is, yeah.
Yeah, the gift she brings is that she doesn't have a need for a man to fulfill her. Yes, there are things that she wants from him that she will yearn for, because that's the depth of the masculine and feminine in the dance of romance,
yeah,
which is a whole other conversation. But at the same time, that she doesn't need the man to be fulfilled, to be herself, is powerful, and it's something I would honor deeply, because a woman who can be that way is healthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, if I put myself back in my dating and relationship history, it really was that sort of switch. Like, I went from always looking to a man in a relationship to fill that need, that insatiable need that I had to be good enough to be okay. And then, you know, it was kind of like I got to the point where it was like, that's it, I'm done, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just going to live my life for me. And in that living my life for me, that's when I became attractive to my partner, Todd, and then it all went well from there, because ultimately we're two whole people. And I mean, it's not like you're perfect, you know, it's not like you figure everything out, but just feeling confident and living your life for you.
Right.
Yeah. Mhm. It's very healthy. It is a good thing.
Yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah. So now, but she's scared to let someone in. So what do you have to say about that?
Yes, that was the other piece.
Right.
Now, I don't know her history in the context of this conversation to give exact answers to her question, so with that
sure.
in mind,
yeah.
The key thing to be aware of is that letting somebody in doesn't violate her if she's autonomous in herself. And it's not about letting somebody in as much as being open to somebody. It's a different energy. Because to let somebody in implies that she's been violated before, possibly, and I don't want to say she has been. But
right.
that violation is something that, yes, there is definitely justifiable fear for that.
Right.
At the same time, to have a clear understanding that she is fulfilled in herself, that she's in the sharing of the overflow, that she'll be opening to somebody in partnership. That's where she shows and dances, and she can reveal herself naturally as she is. And so let somebody in that level is different. So to say that, you know, just go blindly in and let yourself be wide open, no, I don't agree with that. But with diligence and with intention and with clarity, walking in step by step, she can have a very fulfilling relationship by being open to somebody who matches her. And by being fulfilled in herself first, she gives abundantly to a partner. I believe she's in a very good place for a healthy relationship.
Yeah.
So the fear may be from the past. It may be that she's been burnt or hurt before in past relationships that she hasn't yet finished resolving. I don't know.
That's
one question I would ask a client who has that concern. It's like, what was the history? Did it happen before? And how can we move past that so you have trust in yourself enough that you'll choose a partner wisely?
And that's almost where, like, what we were talking about, where, you know, you want to have a crystal clear vision of who you're wanting to attract into your life, right? That was one of the things we were going to talk about tonight.
Yeah, I think we were, yes.
Yeah, so let's bring that up then. So this crystal clear vision, that's what you help your clients sort of come to.
Yes.
And, yeah, maybe just share a little bit about how you go about doing that and what sorts of things we want to be thinking about to have that clear vision.
Absolutely. Well, there's some pieces to this, and I'll explain. I'm sure many people have heard of or seen The Secret.
Yes.
So the thing about The Secret, sorry, I got a call waiting. I didn't get to turn it off. I guess I'll have to be out. The thing about The Secret is it talks about having the vision map, which has been proposed a lot in the last probably dozen years.
Right.
The vision map basically is a picture of, and it's a graphic representation of your intention about one area. It might be a vision board about your whole life, or it might be a vision board about your relationship. So if someone does a vision board for their relationship, it's a picture of everything you want in the relationship, words, pictures, everything else. That is a wonderful starting point. And in fact, in my program, The Romance Blueprint, which we'll talk about soon, one of the pieces I start with my clients in the future vision step is to do a vision board to start with.
Okay.
The vision board is this first step because it's almost like a starting point of where you want to start with.
Right.
But I'm very clear you can't end there. I mean, for some people it works great and you get an immediate result, but the truth is that without the emotional component, it's incomplete, to my belief.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what I work with my clients with is to take that vision board as the building block and then start from there to go into, if that's what you're looking for, then what is your first date like? How does it feel to be in the relationship? And how does it feel to test the waters with somebody? How does it feel with that perfect person you're dreaming of, that you've written about, you've drawn about, and you've pictured? How do they treat you? How do you treat them? How do you work together? How do you walk hand in hand? What does it feel like to be with them for 6 months when you're going out to dinner again or when you surprise them with a gift or they surprise you? All these nuances and subtleties create a very powerful energetic of feeling that is a magnet for your partnership. And having that crystal clear vision, and it's not just a seeing vision, but it's a feeling vision.
Mm-hmm.
There's more, and there's different layers and different modalities. We create this energetic like a magnet, and the more we put energy into it, the more powerful that magnet is to draw to us that which we want.
Exactly. Because that's really the power of the subconscious mind, isn't it? It works
Absolutely.
In images and feelings, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. And so for this caller that's wondering, you know, about being scared to let somebody in, if she's done the work to vision about, not only vision, but feel about who it is that she's wanting to attract, she's going to know very quickly when somebody doesn't fit that vision or that feeling, isn't she?
Mm-hmm.
She knows exactly where she's headed and what she's looking for. And, you know, sort of any off energy, anyone that's, like you were saying before, about this possible violation, you know, from the past or just being hurt from the past or whatever.
Absolutely.
You've kind of got this clear feeling that, nope, that doesn't feel good.
Well, and not only that, but the thing is that energetic, it's almost, I want to say it's almost like certain magnets are tuned to each other, so that which she's looking for becomes more readily available to be drawn to that the partner.
Absolutely.
At the same time, that doesn't line up, will almost not be attracted.
Right.
It just doesn't line up. And so there's less issue with that showing up because it's not something you have to sort through so much.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Okay. Well, that's great. Yeah. So vision board doesn't stop there. You got to get into the feeling of it all.
The feeling tone, yes.
Yeah. To really magnify it to you. That's awesome. Okay. So another question here. We've got one coming from Calgary. Trust is, and it's a female, trust is always a big issue for me in relationships. I'm able to not move forward into other relationships because the baggage from broken trust in past relationships. But she finds herself repeatedly in relationships with men she can't trust.
Well, this goes back to what we started with almost. It's clear that she's not yet resolved that past trigger that's creating that result. And unfortunately, it sounds like until she does choose to resolve that, whatever that trust is, and it may well be within herself, I strongly suspect, because trust is one of those interesting dances, that it's self-trust first before anything else, that if she resolves her own self-trust challenges, either on her own or with a coach like ourselves, that she will then have a shift in her relating, because what happens, our relationships do reflect back to us where we are in our lives. That's the thing about the mirror. And it sounds clearly that she has yet to resolve her own trust. It may be something traumatic, and again, I don't want to presume things about her, but usually those deeper pains or traumas that create trust issues have yet to be resolved, and that requires some deeper work, and not for the faint of heart, but so worth it once it's fulfilled.
So I don't know if this is a good question to ask, but I'm going to ask it, and you just let me know. But do you have an example, like, of how we can sort of put this into, like, a real-life example of what it means to self-trust? Is that an easy question to answer?
Well, I'm looking back to see through any clients I can talk about cleanly. The best example I can come back to, I'll leave the context of, I'm out of the picture right now, so it's safer for them. But the person I know, she had been abused when she was younger by her uncle. So there was a trauma about men in general based upon that one person. And that experience colored every relationship since then, especially romantic ones. So her trust of men was deeply violated from when she was a child. And until she was able to face that and to really take back ownership of herself, and it took a fair few steps, including to go back in her mind as the adult to protect herself as a child, that created a friendship and a bond with herself that was strong enough that she could trust herself. And that's one way. It's not the only one, but it's one avenue that can create self-trust that can rebuild her in her own self-esteem and self-worth. That brings her back to fulfillment in herself again by trusting herself.
Okay, and so in an event like that, where that's what happened in her childhood, what about, how does forgiveness play out in the self-trust piece?
Well, again, it's hard to express this out of context because there's a lot more depth to this. But in the simple terms of saying what it was about, ultimately it became clear that the judgments that she was holding now weren't relevant as much as they were when she was a child.
So by
having forgiveness in the present moment, not to allow the person who did that to her back then to do it again, or anybody else to do it again, for that matter. It became a place where she restored trust in herself because she forgave herself for not trusting herself and not taking care of herself. And when she came to the place of honoring herself that way, then she took her power back. Because up to that point, she had given her power away to somebody who, in fact, had died at that point. Wasn't around anymore. So those things are these ropes we tie to other people that don't support us.
Okay, well, that was good. That was a very interesting question. I'm glad that one came up.
I'm glad I had an answer for you, too.
Yeah, no, you're full of answers. I think that 25 years of of spiritual psychology and human development and all that has a lot of benefit here tonight.
Glad I can help.
Yeah. Okay, so I think then what we should maybe do, how about, I think people would probably want to be interested in hearing how they could continue to work with you going forward. And then once you share that, maybe we'll take a few more questions from the audience because we do have some more. So share parts of how people can continue to work with you, and then we'll move on after that.
Okay. Well, in simple strokes, as I mentioned a couple of times as little teasers earlier on, there's a program I've created called the Romance Blueprint, and it came out of the conversations like this with clients and with other people who I know in this arena, that there are three aspects that we work with, that I work with, particularly with clients, to primarily work with to get into the place we want for a relationship. One is to heal that past baggage, as we mentioned before. One is to have a clear vision of the future that is not just the vision board, but goes beyond that. And the third piece is to be fulfilled in the present moment. And I'm not going to go in detail now because we covered a lot of that in this hour already. So this was about 7-8 months ago. It was about July last year. I had this, I'm going to call it a download or a vision or a meditation, but it became very clear that this is what I was going to create. And it was a 90-day program. I just had it broken down into a skeleton structure. And to be honest, when I wrote it, I was so blown away by it, I got scared of it and put it away for 6 months.
Hmm.
Well, in January, I got a very clear kick to the side of the head by spirit to say, no, create this. It's needed out there.
Right.
So I began writing it. And in less than 2 weeks, I had created this 120-page program that is a fully immersive home study program that has all three aspects throughout the 12 weeks called the Romance Blueprint.
Yeah.
And admittedly, I'm almost daunted by how powerful it is. At the same time, I love it because it's pieces I've learned myself, and it's a jigsaw puzzle that makes sense so that there is a flow from A to B, from the front to back, where, and this one's designed for women, so I'll talk about the men in a moment, but this was particularly tailored towards women where they embody themselves more fully in the moment every day and through each of the 12 weeks, as well as healing the past and visioning the future. So at the end of the 12 weeks, it's the best... sorry, I went into a car analogy in my mind for racing. It's like a practice mat before the race.
Okay.
You know, but it's more than that. But it's that sense of having all the pieces in place so that you can be readily available to meet and attract and create the reality of what you want in relationship with a partner.
Awesome.
And that I don't have a guarantee in my programs that you'll meet them, because that's not my job, that's yours.
Right.
But I have a guarantee that you will have a totally different presentation to meet somebody and to attract somebody and to be in relationship with somebody than you've ever had before.
Great.
So that's one piece, and that's a standalone program. Oh, sorry. Mention the
no, yeah, go ahead. No, yeah, go
well, that,
ahead.
Yes. Well, the Romance Blueprint that I created was originally created for women, but I've been getting, how to say this, feedback.
Mm-hmm.
They've been looking for something like this too.
Right.
The one thing I'm clear about is this program is designed intentionally to be a weekly delivered program so that it's not all in one big lump at the beginning of 12 weeks. It's just too much. So
right.
Each week there's going to be assignments sent to them. So the men's version, it became clear I've got to create that too. So I'm right now in looking at how I can adjust and reprogram this book on this program rather for men, which is coming soon, and bring about another month or two. That'll be out as well. So
okay.
There'll be the home program for both men and for women. At the same time, because some people love more of a direct and deeper approach right off the bat. I do see personal clients and private clients. I am offering, when we get to the end of the corner, I mentioned some of the bonuses. I'm offering some group calls as well for the Romance Blueprint participants, but I also see clients one-on-one, usually over the phone, because I do see clients across the country,
yeah,
and actually internationally, because I have a couple in Canada too. So I do have a few slots left in seeing private clients as well, and that can be in a structured format, because I actually do have what I call a romance makeover, which is four sessions in a month, which is more of a fine-tuning and deepening what they want, and also have what I call a relationship transformation, which is actually 2 months. Not that it happens that way, but it's kind of the intention behind the calls. If one's more of a let's adjust and fine tune, and one's about let's do some deep work.
Good.
And
okay.
Of course, I can go beyond that as well.
Right. Okay, yeah. And so all of these offers then, basically for everyone listening, Barry's put together an offer page, which if you want to check this information out, you can go to therelationshiplounge.com/Barry. So therelationshiplounge.com/Barry, and then you'll find all the information that you need there. And just so you know, for everyone listening in, what I'll do is I'll send an email to all of you just summarizing this call tonight and giving you all of the links that you need to get in touch so that you have them.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Well, then I want to keep a peace of mind, because I'm not sure if it's in the email, because it's not on my site this way intentionally, because I want to make it open to everybody. But I did have a clarity, just to add some excitement to the offer, is that the first 5 women who purchase the Romance Blueprint will also get, as a free bonus, they'll get a free private coaching call with me as a gift on top of the program.
Awesome.
So
yay. Get.
And also, for everybody who signs up for the Romance Blueprint, sorry guys, it's for the women, but all the women who sign up for the Bromance Blueprint in the next 48 hours, so basically until the call ends, because it's, I think if you said it's a 48-hour replay time on the call?
That's right.
Right, so up until that ends, which is basically 2 days from now, anybody who signs up for the Bromance Blueprint will also receive or be part of 2 group consulting calls that I'll host during the program, because you'll all be starting at the same time. It's the perfect way to place a group support call about halfway through and towards the back end, where we can answer any questions and just share how things are going. So there's an extra piece of support added. That's a gift to anybody who chooses the program in the next 48 hours.
Awesome. That's a great idea, because I'll tell you, group work is just a fabulous way to really, really dig deep and learn from one another, right? We learn mm-hmm. not only from books and from teachers, we learn from ourselves.
Yes.
Yeah. Awesome.
And I do like that also because it's clear, because what I love also is because there's a sense of community. And
yeah.
one of my passions is about having more connection and community in the world, and that's one reason I coach in relationship, because that's where community can start.
Mm-hmm.
So
you and me were on like the same path. We're on the same path.
That's good.
That's great. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. If
that's
you want
okay.
to keep going, you keep going.
No, you echoed my thoughts, so we're totally fine.
Okay. 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 Well, then, how about then we? All of you that are listening in, you know, definitely check out that link to see what Barry has to offer. And I think that's an awesome, awesome bonus for group coaching calls. It's just fabulous.
Right.
So great. Thank you, Barry, for that.
Certainly.
And how about then, let's just see what other questions we have coming in here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we have another one coming from Calgary, and this time it's a male. So how
okay.
interesting. Yay. Okay, so it's not the feminine, the nurturer, or sorry, is not the feminine, the nurturing, free-flowing, while the masculine is the hunter structured. Furthermore, do we not vacillate somewhat between masculine and feminine energy, although tending to demonstrate one or the other more dominantly? Did that make sense the way that I read it?
I got the essence of the question, and the simple answer is yes, that's true. but to go beyond that, it is true. We are not locked into one type only. And in relationship, and this is something you can add because I think I know what he's getting at,
yeah.
that men and women in a relationship, we combine, as I mentioned earlier, that we have a 100% total of the masculine together, 100% of feminine together. That's particularly in the romantic side. But also at the same time, a lot of times men and women both go to work in business or have to do the bills or do other things that are really more linear masculine type work.
Yeah.
So both partners can do that. The key, and this is essential, is that you don't want to bring that into the bedroom.
Right.
Because that's
okay.
where the dysfunction happens. And we talked about, I think we mentioned earlier about how we get polarity and how to repolarize. This
mm-hmm.
is a key piece of that, is that
okay.
the masculine, for restoration back into the masculine, one of the simplest things is silence. And I don't mean it like a meditation, but for a man to have peace and quiet for about 15, 20 minutes can be just enough to him to get back to being himself. He doesn't have to do anything with that time. It's not like, okay, now I'm focusing on this. Having quiet time can be a chance for him just to still the mind and become present, because the masculine's pure essence is stillness. And emptiness,
okay.
and that's the emptying out process. The
okay.
feminine, on the other hand, to connect back into the feminine, one of the best ways for her to do that, presuming it's a woman who's the feminine, is actually to talk, to vent and to share and to communicate and to articulate, because it's that every action of doing that fills her back up.
Hmm.
And the challenge is that when a man and woman drive home together from work, for example, and I've got two friends of mine who teach me that, and I love this model, they come home, they work together and they live together, and on the way home,
yeah.
they would talk about their day all the time, and she'll be so happy, and he'd be so upset. And they couldn't figure out why.
Mm.
And what they figured out was is that he didn't have his time to be silent, so they decided on the way home from work, they had a half-hour drive from work to home. Now, 15 minutes, the first 15 minutes, he would have to himself to be silent in the car. They wouldn't talk. They drove together, so they'd be in the car, and she would be abiding her time and waiting and patiently keeping her mouth shut for that time. And for 15 minutes, he would have silence. In the 15 minutes, it's kind of like the timer would go off, and he'd go, okay, and then he could receive his woman to let her share and get her back into her feminine for the next 15 minutes on the way home. It transformed their relationship.
That is interesting.
So there's those things. Now, on a bigger scale, feminine practices like going to the spa are wonderful. Doing things that nurture the feminine are wonderful that way. And for the masculine to go out and hang out with the boys, and it can be going camping or doing masculine-type practices, can also deepen it. But just on a simple level, just the ability of silence and fullness, or emptiness and fullness, rather, can be that restorative to relationship and everyday practices.
Okay. It's awesome how what the one thing I love about doing these calls is I learn something on every single one.
I'm glad I could help.
Yeah, like definitely, even my own experience, that driving home bit, I totally can relate to that. So that's great. Yeah, so okay, we have questions coming in like mad, so let's keep going.
Okay.
Okay, so I haven't pre-read this one, so I'm just going to read it and see where we go. So
okay.
It's a female calling from Edmonton.
Okay.
I've noticed a pattern, from Calgary. I've noticed a pattern. I'm very passionate, loving, caring person. I'm a true Pisces. I find that I end up giving so much of myself to my partner that it seems he ends up taking me for granted, and I end up in a relationship that is not give and take. I forgive and forget quite easily, and I find I keep ending up with men that don't respect me, don't value me, don't appreciate me, and my needs become unimportant and neglected. When the relationship ends, my partner has a hard time letting me go, and we go back and forth, getting back together and breaking up because the balance can't seem to be restored.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow, there's a lot to that.
There is. It's a big long one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not some of that, but the depth of that. What first hit me about that was it sounds like she is so overt in her sharing that she may not, and again, this is not said in the communications, I want to check this, it may be simply that he hasn't felt like he's been listened to or has been received fully.
Okay.
And his taking for granted is that he's not feeling like he's being cherished in the relationship to the level that she's been taken care of, because she's sharing so much. Again, as I mentioned about how women share to release and to become more connected to themselves,
She's
feeling received and fulfilled, and he may not be on that level. So it's not so much taken for granted as much as being resigned to.
Mm.
And that, I would suspect, is what one of the challenges they're facing is. The thing about relationship, it is about a dance and about, I hate to say give and take, it sounds so old-fashioned, but it's a sense of being able to give and receive.
Yeah.
And the ability to be totally heard and felt and listened to is huge. At the same time, the ability to listen and feel and hear somebody else is huge as well.
Right.
But it's not only one way. It's got to be both ways.
So, and it almost, the thing that's standing out for me may just be what you were talking about with the couple driving home from work, where if she's giving and, you know, always being there, always supporting him, he's never been giving, you know, space or time to just be, which is what it sounds like men really want.
Yeah, sometimes what a man wants is just simply to be held by his woman without any words being said, so that he can feel relaxed and nurtured.
Right.
And that can be huge for a man.
Okay. So it really is just respecting those differences again, knowing that you can't just constantly be in a state of giving. You also have to be in a state of receiving, and that's for both of the sexes.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so we've got another one. We've got lots of callers from Calgary tonight. this is an independent woman from Calgary, and some of the men that I meet say that I am stronger than them. I'm tired of meeting that type. Are there truly men around that are strong enough in themselves to enjoy a woman who is confident and wants a partner to add to their life?
Oh, this is a good question. This is why I've got to back to my history on this one myself.
Okay.
There's a difference in the feminine between masculine strength and feminine strength. And I know because I dated many women who I experienced were in the masculine strength because I didn't own mine at the time.
Right.
I may make some assumptions based upon if I don't know all the details of this woman, but a lot of women in the business world particularly who are successful and independent, who think themselves that way, come from a place of being their masculine to do it. They've been very successful in the business world, which I use this model a lot because unfortunately it's the truth of what happens in business. Business is a very masculine arena.
Yeah.
It's competitive, and it's unfortunate to be honest. I wish there was more feminine energy in the business world because that would be more collaboration and cooperation and harmony that would create better results.
Yeah.
But the business has generally been built around this whole competitive structure, which is masculine energy. So she may, in fact, inhabit the masculine energy more than she really wants to in a relationship and hasn't yet discovered how to turn it into her feminine grace. And, I need to say this now because it's something I'm aware of in my teaching, that masculine strength seems to be the most powerful thing in the world, yet life itself is feminine. And so the feminine strength outweighs the masculine 100 to 1,000 to 1. In another analogy, I'm love to use analogies, is that imagine the biggest ocean-going oil tanker, the biggest boat in the ocean that takes 3 miles to turn. It's a huge boat, huge ship, rather.
Yeah.
Well, that's the masculine energy, pure that amount of force and direction, and also, generally like most men, takes a long time to change direction.
Yeah.
But when you say, well, where's the feminine? Well, the feminine is the ocean the boat's on.
Right.
The feminine is so much bigger in her depth and in her ability as a goddess that if any woman chooses to step into that fully, she'll find it so much more rewarding than being the masculine strength because that's actually limiting by comparison.
Mm-hmm.
So for her to meet men who are in their masculine strength, she may be meeting them, but yes, she may be meeting men who aren't choosing their masculine authentically, which does happen as well. At the same time, she may have some opportunities to grow in her feminine to become even stronger, but also become more flexible, more flowing, and more inviting to a masculine male.
Right.
You know, some I've seen out there a lot in couples I know where they competed for the relationship. They're both in the masculine. And because they've been trained that way. In this culture, that's what relationship should be like. And so mm-hmm. they're in a relationship and they wonder why it's dysfunctional.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because of the fact they're both trying to be in the masculine position and it doesn't work.
Yeah. So how does a woman embrace her femininity, the feminine more strongly, more fully? Like what?
Let me count the ways.
Yeah, good. I'm glad there's a few.
Oh, there are indeed.
Variety is the spice of life.
Yes. The feminine, oh boy, and this depends on where the client is or where the woman is in the journey. For many women, the simple act of doing things that are nurturing changes everything for them. And it's not just wearing makeup and wearing high heels. It's about doing things that are self-nurturing for the soul.
Right.
And a lot of things I recommend for my clients is doing things that are both, one is to open up sexuality and one's to open up sensuality. So one is to get to be around other women in a sisterly type connection. It can be goddess type work that's out there. There's a lot of that on the West Coast. I'm not sure about Calgary. But
yeah, actually,
in California,
a lot of
that.
Yeah, we have a lot of goddess groups out here, yeah.
And another level, which I know the men would like to hear about, is that the big thing's been happening. I don't know big thing's been happening, but I know a lot of women get a lot of connection to their femininity by doing things like learning how to do pole dancing. Must be the last thing I discovered. But there's a woman in California, she's an actress, who set up the S Factor. And many women have found that teaching, it's not about sexual energy, it's about claiming back feminine strength, that has been transformative for her clients. And I've got, I know women who have been through that and changed their lives.
Great.
And, of course, the men go, oh, it sounds great. Well, it's not like they think it is. But at the same time, there are benefits that men will certainly appreciate.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's a couple of examples. Definitely there's more to it than that. Yeah. But the other part as well is also for many women, they've chosen a masculine profession because that's what the world teaches.
Yeah.
And in fact, I met somebody yesterday who's was going through her own, I don't know, a life crisis, but she's feeling her calling in her heart, this yearning to be expressed, which is to write poetry that touches her heart. And I can feel it in her. And I almost was in tears because I could feel the joy of that in her. That she was just now getting a glimpse that she could have. And yes, she could do her business at the same time, but to nurture and grow that heart's yearning could be the biggest thing to transform her feminine, what's what I'm looking for, her natural femininity.
Yeah.
And it felt like that because I felt her tenderness and her depth when we were talking about it that moved me and you know, just standing there with her and just felt that joy. That it's so, I was so, almost want to stand and applaud her for choosing that because that would touch her back into a natural being.
Right.
And that again is another practice or a new technique. So for women to choose and find what their gifts are, it's not so much about purpose as much as it's about sharing gifts that fulfill them in the very act of giving them.
Okay. Okay, well, we're coming now to the end of the call. So I wonder, Barry, do you have like just a few last words that you'd like to leave us with tonight before we head out?
Oh, wow.
A summary that you have for us?
Well, to summarize in simple terms, relationships, they're sometimes the greatest work we can do in the world, the greatest gift we can give to the world, and the greatest opportunity to grow ourselves and to open our hearts. At the same time, they can be the scariest place to play. But I'm very clear that the rewards and the fulfillment and the joy that comes from being in a healthy, conscious, growing relationship outweigh anything else for me. Now I'm biased about that. So I choose relationships as a vehicle through which people can be more fulfilled and be more present to themselves in the world.
Absolutely. You know, that speaks to, on the Relationship Lounge, we have a purpose and mission page. And on that page, one of the core values is relationships are a path to enlightenment. So
yes.
I say that I second that motion.
I wholeheartedly agree, yes.
Yes, awesome. Well, I want to thank you wholeheartedly for being here tonight. Your wisdom is immense. It's tremendous. And I don't know about everybody else here, but I'm quite certain that they must have learned something because I absolutely did. So thank you so much, Barry, for being here tonight.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Thank you.
You're very welcome. So once again, for everyone listening, if you'd like to take the next steps with Barry, just go to www.therelationshiplounge.com/Barry for more details. And on that page, you'll also notice that coming up next, we have next week the Enlightened Love Coach, Karen Claussen, on March 28th at 5 p.m. Pacific. And in this call, Karen is going to show us how you can experience enlightened love in every relationship. She's going to teach us how we can expand our awareness and become open to new possibilities, discover powerful tools that will help you create a deeper connection with those that you care about, and finally feel great about who you are. So once again, join us on the Relationship Lounge next week on Monday, March 28th at 5 p.m. Pacific. And if you'd like to see a complete list of all of our upcoming speakers at the Relationship Lounge, you can just go to www.therelationshiplounge.com/events. So that's it. Thank you so much, everyone, for being here. Have a great night, and we will see you next week.